Hey, I'm Ryan Burke from Angry Orchard in Walden, New York, and you're listening to Cider Chat.
Episode 9. Hello and welcome to Cider Chat. This is Rhea Wincoller, your Cider MC. And we are just jiving away here on a fantastic show this week. We'll be headed to New York State in the land of Walden, the town of Walden, where we'll be speaking to the head cider maker at Angry Orchard. So I've got some great swag to give away from Angry Orchard, and I'll be talking about that at the end of this episode. So do stay tuned. Now, before we go to New York, and I mean, who doesn't want to go to New York? Because there's so much amazing stuff going on there. I want to say, like, the New York Cider Association is just cranking because the governor, Governor Cuomo, Andrew Cuomo, really supports cider in that state. And what an incentive for new cider makers to get involved and to be seen. There's a whole press tour junket that's happening. Just amazing support for cider makers. And wouldn't that help any one of us who is in the 50 states, or if you are international, to get that kind of government support to move cider forward? So we're not going to be really speaking too much about that on the show, but I will have the link to that association and you could see more info on that. And I'll probably be talking about it in upcoming episodes. I also want to take the opportunity to give a shout out to some folks who have recently joined the Cider Chat Facebook page, and that's Celeste and the Cidermonger. They both like the page, so thank you very much. I'm in a lot of different directions at the same time, so as we kind of move along and get more folks interacting, more things go up. And of course, I'm very involved on social media in terms of Twitter, and we had a bunch of recent conversations and different followers. So I want to say thank you to Cider Express. That's at Cider Express UK. They do ciders and perries from the UK's small producers, and they have a wide selection available in early 2016. And also Apple County Cider. That's at Apple_County Company CO. And it's an award-winning 100% apple juice, single variety, lightly sparkling bottled ciders and cider straight from the vat. I'm getting thirsty just thinking about that. And also thank you to Richard Allen, who is a cider aficionado too. And I always really enjoy some of these amazing Twitter chats that I had. And one was prompted while I was in California last week. And while I was there, I did an interview with Randall Graham from Bonnie Doon Vineyard. He makes some amazing, amazing ciders, one with quince. So that'll be coming in a upcoming show, no doubt. But while I was heading north, my family's from California and I was doing some stuff there and headed up to San Francisco, and I stopped at Golden Gate Park. And this is some cool info for all of us in Ciderville. One is that there was this guy by the name of John McLaren, and he was the designer essentially for Golden Gate. He was called the Boss Gardener. The guy only stood 4'7". And if you want to find out more info, I'm going to have a link to the book about his life. But I found out about him by taking a Segway tour. Yeah. And throughout Golden Gate. That was really, really fun. And it was even raining, but who cared, because it was so much fun. So anyway, so that gave me info. And I found out that night that they're at the Academy of Science, the California Academy of Science, which is an amazing museum in the park again. They have a Thursday night event where you can go and for only $12, go to an adult only scene where they are serving libations. I mean, is that speaking to us or what? Of course, I had the curiosity, what kind of libations do they serve? And you know, you go in, you get kind of overwhelmed. And I went into the room, took the elevator down, because we knew that there was a bar down there that might have cider, because they have bars at all the different levels. And wouldn't you know that there was some cider, and they were serving a can from a Golden State Cider, and that's a California cidery. And it was perfect. Poured it into the glass, walked around in the amazing aquarium. There was dancing at the museum. I got to see an albino alligator. Yes, an albino alligator with pink eyes. Go to the planetarium. There's an earthquake room. A cool place. And the cool thing, I think I'm going off on a tangent now, but the cool thing is at Golden Gate, thanks to John McLaren, that you could drink alcohol in Golden Gate Park. Think about that. You could have your little cider picnic in Golden Gate Park. So some cool stuff, and I was able to do a little bit of tweeting and posted a photo of a Golden State cider libation there, right up on Twitter. So I just love having conversation with everyone. So thank you, thank you, thank you for being part of this podcast and inspiring me to be in Ciderville and share what I have with you. And I have one more tidbit for all cider makers and cider maker enthusiasts. CiderCon, which is held by the U.S. Cider Maker Association, has just extended their early registration to January 4th. So there is still time to get that reduced rate. And that will be happening in February 2016. So you could go to the show notes at ciderchat.com to get a link to that and get the info you need to move forward and go to CiderCon. Now, I think we're ready to roll into Walden. I'm going to take you on a little bit of a road trip here. So get ready to grab your glass and join this chat. It is a star-spangled day as I am headed to the Angry Orchard location in Walden, New York. And a couple of billowy clouds, a lot of blue sky, just a small bit of wind on November. And someone in front of me who needs to get their muffler repaired. And I'm climbing along, going, it feels like I'm going pretty uphill to get there, even though this is in a pretty populated area. It's on the west side of the Hudson River in New York State. We are north of New York City, and you take I-84 to get here and take exit 8, at least coming from the, I was on I-84 heading west. And it's just beautiful, beautiful area, as you would expect. All New York is really stunning. And I'm pretty excited to go up and meet Ryan Burke. He is a cider maker. Maybe he calls himself the Cider Master. We'll find out about that. And he's new at this site. And this whole site is actually new. It just opened last weekend, the first weekend of November, in November 2015, to tourists coming in. They're providing tours and tasting. And I'm happy. I'm happy for this area because it must be a major boom for the economy to be bringing in a destination spot that's off the beaten trail and just right outside of New York. So, bully for everyone here. Well done. And I'm going to sign off and kind of meet with you up the road a little bit on this edition of Cider Chat. Hi, Ryan.
Hey.
Nice to meet you.
Thanks for coming by.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Yeah.
What were you in the middle of doing when I...
Just cleaning the floors.
Cleaning the floors. Oh, well, you know...
Just trying to make it look
that's
nice.
That's always the most important job.
It is very important.
All the custodial work.
Probably half the yard is keeping the place clean, so... just took a big load of barrels in, and always a messy job, so...
Yeah. Where were you getting your barrels from?
All this oak is French oak, but the wine that was in it before we got them was West Coast Pinot and Cab and West Coast Chard.
Mm-hmm. Are they all like had some wine in, or are you just?
Yeah, I don't use any. I use a little bit of new oak, but very sparingly because it's really intense.
Yeah.
With the cider, such a delicate beverage. It doesn't generally appreciate a ton of oak character. It becomes so overpowering. So I don't generally use anything that's younger than 4 or 5 turns. I like oak, but I don't like a lot. So more or less these barrels will be less for character, and more for storage, sort of light oxidation, maturing.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll, you know, get, of course, some oak, but mm-hmm. the presence will be pretty...
And this is your largest barrels here at this facility?
Or
you have some larger ones?
In Cincinnati, we've got some bigger ones.
What are the sizes of that? Because these are 50 barrel. And
I shouldn't say because I don't know the exact number.
You could stand in them.
The oak tons. You could stand in. They're actually kind of. They're really round and squat. I would say they hold about roughly like 1,600 gallons are the mm-hmm. size of them.
Mm-hmm.
So I've got a 1,000-gallon guy here that I just got.
Nice.
We're working on expanding the oak program here. So there's some barrel aging here, but really when you pulled in, there's an old stone barn back there.
Mm-hmm.
We're rehabbing that right now, so that's going to be the center of barrel aging for the company. And,
nice.
We'll fill it up with a few hundred individual barrels as well mm-hmm. as some bigger tons.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
I hope to be able to say next time I talk to you, this is the place where the biggest ones are at.
We'll
see what happens.
Well, I have a feeling.
Yeah.
You know, I actually do like the oak barrels that, like the plane. I won a couple awards with some sizers in it and just like had them in for just a little bit, like, you know, a week or two in there mm-hmm. and didn't have all the flavors of the wine.
Yeah.
You know, which kind of sets it apart because sometimes the wine really overwhelms it. Tasting it, you probably experience that too.
Yeah.
So, I don't know, I'm just putting that little dib in there if you ever, you know, just go with a straight oak.
Yeah. I mean, we'll taste some cider.
I'm sure you will.
Well, I have one on draft right now that has a portion of it was aged in new American oak, and then I blended it back into the larger cider. So, I fermented the cider, aged some in new American oak, kept the rest in stainless. Mm-hmm. And then blended the new American oak stuff back in. So you get mm-hmm. a little bit of the sort of fresh oak quality and sort of vanilla and spices and heavy wood. And then, but it works into the blend as more of like a weighty tannic character mm-hmm. and less about oak.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So
I'd like to give you a little idea of where Ryan and I were chatting. We're at the Angry Orchard Innovation Center and Cider House in Walden, New York, and it's a two-level building. And you walk in the main entrance, and you go immediately into this educational center where you're learning about cider, whether you know about it or not. It's pretty cool, and they have that Angry Orchard truck that you see on the commercials. And then you walk, you keep on going, bearing to the right, past all these displays on cider and the history of cider. And then you come into this walkway, and on one side, you could see the wash area where they prepare the apples for the pressing. And then on the other side is where they are actually fermenting the cider and making their experimental batches. So it's a pretty cool center. And then you walk actually down the stairs and go past that fermentation room, and there's another barrel that you pass, and that will bring you again on the tour and eventually to the tasting room. That's really, really lovely. So let's get back to this chat and hear what Ryan has to say about Angry Orchard and its production of ciders.
This is wash short press for apples.
Mm-hmm.
Bin in, dump to visual inspection, tunnel rinser, cleaner, then a second rinse, to elevator, to mill, to belt press.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So. How many people do you have working on this when it's rolling?
Two people max. It's pretty, you basically dump a bin of apples in and you can walk away from it. Mm-hmm. It doesn't, aside from you might want to be inspecting your fruit.
Right,
but
right.
The rest of it just runs.
And you're able to bring a vehicle in from that, like you have like three.
We've got a loading dock out there.
Loading dock, so. And those two are just like indoor docks or?
Just storage.
Storage.
Cold
docks,
storage
nice.
And dry storage.
Yeah.
And then we've got up front, the big old red barn up front is actually cold storage, so mm-hmm. we're filling that up with apples as we speak.
How involved were you in the design of the production here? Pretty involved?
Yep.
Great. And your history a little bit, you worked at Virtue?
Yeah, I was head cider maker at Virtue for 3 odd years,
uh-huh.
Maybe 4 years. I can't remember anymore. 4 years. Help start Virtue, and then here for my professional career.
So you got like this, dude. You got this like dream job. Everybody's like, going, wow. You know, is this something that you have to kind of like be like within the world of the? Because Virtue is now owned by Anheuser InBev, right?
Yep.
And this, of course, is a subsidiary of Sam Adams, so
yeah,
you're in the world of the big players.
I mean, no comparison between.
Born into this or what?
No comparison on size from us to AB InBev. It's not
sure,
even.
Of course.
I mean, we're a blip on their radar, you know. So
well, in the craft beer world, I'd give yourself some credit here. I think
Pretty good. I would say in the craft beer world, certainly, and I would keep us out of any AB InBev conversations. We're just not the same thing. I mean, it's nice. It's nice to have resources, and this place is unbelievable, and I am honored and lucky to be here. So, I would say it's a dream job.
Yeah, exactly. You got kind of like the apple within your hand, and a lot of potential here.
Yeah.
And you probably have a little lab where you're working with yeast and all that jazz.
Yeah.
So, I'd like to talk to you a little bit about that and a little bit about the process because, and also just to give like the listeners an overall because they do get a little confused, like Angry Orchard, it says like Cincinnati, Ohio, and yet this is really, in many ways, I think it's the tourist spot, right, to really set a, for the local economy, it must be fantastic, beautiful area here in Walden, New York.
Yeah, I mean, we want to be able to show people what cider is. We want to be able to talk about the history of the Hudson Valley and the history of this farm, as well as the Chris family that's been farming in the region for generations. And then we want to have a center for research and development. So, yes, we make cider in Cincinnati, but this is really going to be the brain trust of innovation, and that's what we needed. We really want to have a center. We want to centralize our new product development and our research and development for the future. And we're happy to be able to show that to people at the same time. So it's a really cool space.
Yeah, really cool.
And it doesn't allow us to just focus on cider making, but on apple growing. And so, you know, from a company standpoint and on a personal standpoint, it's, you know, it's what I want to do. And now we and I can. It's great, and we've got, you know, Jeff Chris staying on to farm the land. So we've got a guy that, you know, knows more about apple growing than most people alive. So it's an honor and a privilege to be able to work with somebody like that.
Yeah, that's really sweet. That's great. Now, how many cider makers are here?
Myself and my assistant cider maker here is Anna Hassan. So she's around. You'll meet her.
Oh, nice.
She's got a viticultural background and a culinary background, and is a whiz in the lab. So happy to have her on board.
Cool.
Yeah.
And is there a main cider maker for Angry Orchard, like David Sipes? Is he?
Hi.
Okay. All right. I just want to get clear on that. Well,
that's
let me shake your head again, man. Okay.
Yeah.
So that's great. And so the two of you are working that out, and then you're doing your test work here and perfecting it, and then sending it out to.
We'll do research and development. You know, scalable projects, absolutely. And then we'll make cider that's just for here. We want to put stuff on draft for people that take the time to come out and see us. You know, stuff for special events and festivals, and maybe some of it'll leave the property here and there. You know, we don't really know yet. But yeah, I mean, really making cider for the sake of making cider, and you know, we want to show people what it can be. So, we've got 12 taps to do that, so we can put stuff on and take stuff off and try new things and see what people think. And
so, how many of those taps would be not the typical Angry Orchard ciders that you would get outside of here?
So right now they're actually split. So I said there's 12. Really, there's 6. So three of them, you know, so there's two different draft towers. Each one has the same thing on right now.
Okay.
I mean, we're just getting going, so we just, you know, we don't have that much to throw out there yet. So three Angry Orchard, you know, styles that you would be used to, and then we've got two ciders that are kind of a little more off the wall. One is our house cider, our farm cider, called so because all the apples are off this orchard. So it's the first cider we made with all the fruit here. That's the one I mentioned. It's got a little bit of American oak in it. Did a wild fermentation. It's really dry, unfiltered, Mm-hmm. It's cool. Mm-hmm. The other one is called the Wooden Sleeper, and that is a bourbon barrel aged cider. Mm-hmm. So all traditional bittersweet cider fruit, with a little bit of an acid blend to it, and then aged in bourbon barrels for about 5 months. Nice. Pretty high ABV, pretty dry, mm-hmm. kind of a more challenging or a complex cider.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that you have your standard ciders in the, is it the cellar house styles?
So, cider house.
Cider
collection.
House, sorry.
Yeah, we have those in bottles available.
Not on draft.
We don't currently put it on draft at all.
Yeah.
But we'll see. We'll see what happens there. Yeah. But yeah, we do have it in bottles.
Well, that's good for folks to know that they could come here and get a nice, unique cider here specific to them.
And the Cider House collection is really cool stuff. It's cider that we're all really proud of. Mm-hmm. And it, you know, it's often something that people haven't tried from us and, you know, don't know that we make. It's sort of mm-hmm. kind of hovering in the background. It has different, you know, it's higher ABV than most of our stuff. So, you know, for instance, in New York, it wouldn't be available at your average bottle shop. It could mm-hmm. only be sold at a liquor store, and that's just because of the laws here. So, mm-hmm. you know, I think it, sometimes people just don't know that these offerings exist from us. Mm-hmm. And, mm-hmm. You know, they're, you know, the Muse, one of the three, is number 4 on Rate Beer best cider in the world right now. I mean, the people that have had it love it. You know, I mean, it's really solid stuff.
So can I just for that kind of educational purpose, mm-hmm. what is your job title?
Head cider maker.
Mm-hmm. And this is just the kind of a thing that I'm kind of on the quest for because I get different answers. Is it cider maker one word or cider and then maker two words?
Oh, man. I've been on that same quest for a long time.
And people are just going by Google or Word Doc.
Yeah, I see it both ways. I think my business card is one. No, it's two words. My business card is two words.
Yeah, so they went with
but the, I didn't make
the
card,
Google
so.
Doc, yeah. But, but you probably would put it as one word? I mean, if it's a winemaker...
It's a winemaker, it's one word.
If it's a brewmaster, it's one word.
One word, yeah. Yeah, it should be one word. That's a good point.
And I think that this is one of the things I'm trying to bring up in Cider Chat, is that I think it's part of the education where you're doing a disservice to the public by having so many descriptors.
Yeah.
And so head cider maker.
Mm-hmm.
And how do you describe cider to people? What's your description of cider?
That's a really broad question.
Someone who doesn't know.
It's so multifaceted that I would
have... What is that, apple juice? You know,
yeah,
so.
I mean, I would have a hard time, like, really...
What's your quickest way? Somebody, you know, they don't really know who you are and say, hey,
sure.
What is
I guess I'd speak from my own particular brand of cider making is that it's, you know, it's all about apples. And if it isn't about apples, then it starts, you know, drifting away from what I think cider should be. And you know, it's a beverage that is can be serious, and it's a beverage that can be fun. And I think that's what kind of, you know, people are like, is it wine, is it beer? Well, it sort of straddles these categories. So, you know, wine is so serious, and I love wine. Well, my mom's not listening, I drink quite a bit of wine. And I enjoy wine, and I use wine for influences. Yeah. I probably use wine as an influence more than I use cider or beer, just from a taste profiles. Mm-hmm. But it's so serious. And then beer is, you know, a little bit more fun. And cider, I think, gets to be both. Because, yeah, I mean, yes, there are, like, very serious cider makers, and you can really focus in on varieties and terroir and all of that. But then you can also make something that's fun, like, hop cider, for instance. We have Hop and Mad. A lot of people are making hop ciders. And, like, you know, a couple years ago, I was more on the serious side of all that, and I've been like, no way, total purist, absolutely not. Mm-hmm. Although then my friend and I'm honored to say mentor, Tom Oliver in England, made a hopped cider. And I was like, Tom, how can you do that? Like, how do you make a hopped cider? And he said, hey, man, what grows together goes together. And it totally makes sense. And, like, don't take it so seriously, you know? It's supposed to be fun. And, you know, so I sort of see it as this beverage that you can give it your serious thoughts, but you can also sit back and, you know, drink a pint of something cool and fun. And,
absolutely.
So yeah, I sort of see it as this very versatile, versatile beverage. It's what I just said, and then it's also, you know, great to drink with food. It's that's probably one of the most important things to me, is that I love to eat. If you couldn't tell. I'm sort of standing back this way, but...
No, he looks fine, actually. He looks fine.
I like to eat a lot. From a pairing standpoint,
yeah.
Cider stands out, in my opinion, because, again, from the sort of what grows together goes together standpoint, you know, you don't see pigs running around vineyards or sheep running around a hop field, but go to the great cider growing regions of the world, and there's... pigs and there's cows.
Absolutely.
And then they make cheese and they make meat, and what's going to be better, the wine grown in France or the apples grown right there on that farm and turned into cider, from a pairing and what stands up to it standpoint? And it doesn't necessarily have to be, you know, grown in that orchard or whatever, but you know, from that standpoint, these things really, really are, you know, perfect pairs together. And so I see it as this, you know, long-winded answer, the sort of you know, versatile and fun beverage.
Something that you would recommend that people actually have food with cider.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not like sipping, like wine is often, can be sipped alone in many ways.
Cider certainly can too. It's just such, it's gratifying to find those perfect pairs and, you know, always on that quest.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of pairs,
yeah.
Perry.
Ha. Yeah. Love Perry. I wish there was, you know, great Perry pairs around for us to work with. There's hardly any anywhere in the world, you know, from a true Perry pair. They just hardly exist. Now they certainly do exist, and there's some lucky people in the States that, you know, for instance, Farnham Hill. You know, Steve is a force, and. You know, put Perry pears in the ground. I think they're just finally bottling it now in the last year or two. Happy to be able to taste some stuff being made in America. But you know, most of the Perry got to go overseas for, and it's in limited quantities there. So if your question is, will we be making one?
That's my question.
Yeah, I think we'll play around with the pears that are available in the region.
Are you planting any?
We're not planting any pears.
Yeah.
We are planting cider fruit coming spring. I think we will plant some Perry trees, but not in the coming planting season, and not in the one after that, because all that stuff's already in the nursery and on its way, basically. But then I think we've got some more room to play around. You know, the thing with the Perry pears is, you know, put those trees in the ground, I'm going to be 45 by the time there's fruit on them. So it's a long turnaround. So
what's wrong with 45? That's young.
Yeah. No,
that's
I know. Young. No, for sure. That's young, but it's 10 years from now. You know, I think the folk science there is pears for your heirs. They just take forever, and they're finicky, and man, but when you have one, a great Perry is not like nothing else.
Too bad you weren't up at the cider salon, because there's an amazing Perry there, Aaron Burr.
Aaron Burr, yeah.
Yeah, that's a really great Perry.
Yeah.
And was quite popular at cider salon.
He does a nice job.
Yeah, yeah. So there definitely are some in the U.S. in that way. And so the juice, you're definitely pulling it off of this. How many acres do you have here?
60.
60. And you're bringing also juice in from New York State or further?
New York State, Northeast.
Do you ship any in from overseas? Or?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep. We source from Brittany. And Normandy, and that's where we bring in a bunch of bittersweet.
Mm-hmm.
So we're lucky to have access there, where they, you know, never stopped planting cider fruit, or they never made the gross error to tear it out of the ground for no reason at all.
Mm. Yeah, well, you're definitely bringing the Big Apple back to New York State.
Yeah.
And so the juice, is it concentrate juice or?
We do both. We use concentrate and we use single strength fresh juice.
And when I think of concentrate, I think concentrate has sugar added to it. Is it sugar added concentrate?
It depends on the cider. We do different things. I mean, it comes in at a certain Brix, and we and we dilute it down to single strength, basically, with water.
Mm-hmm.
It just depends on what the final outcome is on the cider.
Some of the things I hear about Angry Orchard, you know, it's just a pretty sweet cider, especially mm-hmm. kind of what I would consider like introductory, you know, some of the crisp. Mm-hmm. And folks, especially, it's a great cider for somebody who's never had cider because they expect sweet cider.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're not going to be disappointed because they get that. So I just wonder, is there like a back sugaring on your cider? Because you have such an amazing apple aroma,
mm-hmm.
like the apple ginger.
Yep,
really has this amazing aroma and nose to it.
Yeah, we back sweeten with juice.
Which is probably concentrate juice,
yep.
if I could assume that. Yeah.
I
don't want to give away any of your proprietary
I'm just kind of curious
because I know
we openly talk about it.
That's what folks are really curious about in many ways.
Sweet quality, but it also has a tannic and acidic backbone.
Right,
so
right.
Where yes, it is sweet, it also is made with bittersweet traditional cider fruit. And then with some high acid culinary fruit too. So
mm-hmm.
I agree that it is sweet, but I would say that that's not all it has to offer. It has both bittersweet character and interesting acidity that lends to a balanced cider. That being said, we've got a lot of other cider, and most of it isn't as sweet. In particular, Stone Dry, which we just came out with and is my first cider for the company, is dry by any measure,
mm-hmm.
and it has much more bittersweet character to it. It's drier and kind of more complex and more bittersweet forward.
Mm-hmm.
So. The American public is the average cider drinker drinks Angry Orchard crisp. That's what people like. And that's great. And, we're excited to be able to give them that beverage. And we're also excited to kind of bring in new taste profiles for people. And so some of the people in the sort of they're coming in that introductory cider, well, now they can see Stone Dry. Well, that opens them up to, oh, man, cider. Maybe they only thought cider could be like crisp, and that's their exposure to it. Now they're here, we're giving them something a little more dry and complex, and I hope, from my personal drinking, it lends more to dryness. So happy to make a drier cider, and I hope that it exposes people not just to our cider, but
mm-hmm.
let's opens the door for exploration into the entire category of drier, more complex or bittersweet forward
mm-hmm.
ciders.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Chris, what ABV is that?
5.
And then some of your ciders go up to like 10%.
Correct.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a whole range there. And when you talk about spontaneous fermentation, how would you describe that to someone who has no idea of spontaneous? And how are you doing that here? Because spontaneous fermentation in Europe could be like open vats,
mm-hmm.
where you're getting the natural yeast coming in.
Sure.
But I imagine you have a bit more control than that. You're not doing open vat fermentation.
Well, cider doesn't really require the open vat thing like beer does. We're bringing yeast in on skin, and we certainly have it in the air. But, the cider-making process from turning apple into juice is pretty open air itself. So, really, we pick up what's in the air all the way through the process. I mean, the juice is exposed. There's sort of difference between having to do with beer, where they put it up in a cool ship and it cools down. Well, it's too hot and would kill off any of the yeast. So, they let it expose to the air until it picks up, and then they, then they go into their fermenters. And not to say that there aren't people doing open air stuff in cider, but I would say generally it's not open air, and that it's closed, and the open airness is the cider pressing, the apples coming in, as well as the pressing experience, which is constantly being, the juice is being exposed to whatever's in the atmosphere. So it's up to the cider maker at that point, how are you going to treat the juice? You're going to kill everything off with sulfite or whatever you might use, or are you going to, just let it go on its own? I would give too much away if I told you exactly how I did things. But if you wanted to do wild fermentation at home, if that's, sort of the question,
sure.
The best way is to back off on your sulfites, if you're using them. You don't want to kill, if you want something wild, you don't want to kill it off. But you also, once fermentation starts, you don't necessarily want a lot of oxidation exposure, because then you're going to end up with vinegar in the end. So
I would be sensitive on my sulfite use, and I would keep a closed container.
So you're probably doing quite a bit of tasting along the way and bring it to a particular profile. How do you maintain that continuity between your ciders, especially when you're dealing with spontaneous fermentation?
Yeah, with the wild stuff.
Because you're putting out a lot of product here, you know, that that continuity is...
Blending back end. You could be playing with fire, you know, and often you are. So it's a matter of be able to keep some sort of stock volume. You know, it's great if you can fill some barrels and, you know, keep four or five or six, and then you have something to blend with. Really, it comes down to blending. You know, how do you get to a? If you're gonna go that route, if you're gonna do, you know, wild natural fermentation, you know, and you want to keep some continuity, then you start bringing in a whole new load of challenges for yourself. So you have to kind of decide on a profile that you're after, and then I think you need to be able to blend in order to get it there, because there's always going to be variation. That's what keeps it interesting anyway. Mm-hmm. So I would say from year to year, you know, those sort of things will always be different. But if your goal is continuity in any way, you've got to have blending stock.
I mean, is that your goal? Because you do have vintage, like the 2015 crop is just amazing with apples. So is that really a concern for Angry Orchard? That you're okay with have different year, different vintages?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what keeps it exciting.
Right, exactly.
To me, this is all about agriculture and adding to the agricultural landscape of New York, or greater than that, of cider.
You're originally from New York,
I am originally
aren't you?
From New York, yes. Yeah, upstate.
Upstate?
Williamson,
okay.
New York, yeah.
Nice.
If I can help grow the industry and by putting fruit in the ground, then I did what I was supposed to do, and that's what I care about. So
nice. Now I have a little bit of history with just cider and the whole history here, because I've met Alan Tringham.
Sure.
And also
great.
Grant Wood way back. He came to one of my cider making demos at Cider Days, and we're talking a number of years ago when they were just starting to experiment with cider making. And of course Alan passed away, unfortunately. I think it was in 2012.
Yep.
And did you ever get a chance to meet him?
I never did.
Yeah.
I hope to carry his legacy forward, though.
Yeah, I'm sure everyone does. And of course he worked with Bulmers and had like a 40-year career there. So, you know, again, I'm just trying to hope some of the clarification, because there was another pre-brand before Angry Orchard, which was
Hardcore.
And that kind of went away, and then Angry Orchard came about. So I'm really wondering, why the name Angry Orchard?
Once the leaves drop off the trees, there's the visual. You know, we really wanted to pay homage to the apple trees of yore. You know, the original true apple trees before brellising and all that, before we were putting, you know, tons of fruit per acre, and you had these, you know, old big standard orchards. You know, they're sort of knotty and twisted and angry looking.
Yeah. I think they look kind of happy myself. This is a happy orchard. I see those trees out there. They look like they're dancing, saying yabba dabba doo.
Well, I mean, you know, the trees on the logo aren't. They all seem to be pretty happy.
Yeah,
they're drinking cider.
Yeah, I was just wondering if there was any kind of little lore there other than.
Just an ode to the orchard.
Yeah. Okay.
To the tree.
All right. Good. 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 What are some of the trends that you see? What do you?
I think, you know, when you asked me what I thought cider, how I would explain cider to folks, you know, I sort of see those are also the trends in cider at the moment, and it probably continue that way. Sort of kind of fun experimental stuff, and then getting, you know, really serious on apple varieties. Where I'd like to see it go is to a place where we can start talking about regionality and being able to identify regionality. You know, I want to know what New York cider is. I want to know what, you know, well, I know what New Hampshire cider is. I want to know, you know, what's a West Coast cider taste like? There hasn't been a ton of uniformity on exactly what that means. And really that's the industry that hasn't developed to the point where we can,
you know, the New York cider makers haven't agreed that here's the 10 varieties we're growing here. We want to get a ton of fruit in the ground. We're going to decide these are the 10 varieties that we want growers to grow, and this is what we're going to focus on, and this is how we're going to grow this industry. And there is talk of that, and I think it'll happen, and that's a trend that I'm the most excited about. It's going to take years and years and years of committed people to get it there, and I think we have those people in place now. So I think that's a trend that's obviously going to take some time. And then I think you see, you know, people are, everybody wants bittersweet, everybody wants bitter sharp. Most people can't get it. Okay, cool, I want to make cider. What the hell do I do? So you see that trend. People want to get a cidery going. They want bittersweet and bitter sharp, and they're going to put it in the ground maybe or maybe not, and they're going to wait 5 or 6 years to do it. So what are you going to do in the meanwhile? What are you going to do in the meantime? Especially, let's say you live out on the West Coast, and you know it's sort of uniform on apple varieties for the most part. What are you going to do? You're going to throw peaches in it. You're going to make hop cider. You're going to, you know, I don't know what, you know, whatever Reverend Nat's up to these days. Putting jalapenos and stuff in the cider and making great product. And I think it's great. So you don't see that anywhere else. The innovation lies in America, and it's a really cool thing to see. You know, we sort of take these old traditions and do whatever the hell we want. Mm-hmm. We've seen it in beer. We see it in beer right now. You know, and it sort of goes back to that sort of playful, you know, fun side of it. You know, you don't see that. No one's putting hops in their, you know, in their rosé, you know.
It's, well said. Well said.
So it's kind of it's kind of cool, and it people can leave their mark and, you know,
and keep on building up on the apple. Well, I was speaking to David Kors at Sonoma, and they're doing what they're going to call an imperial cider.
Yeah.
And of course, I was just waiting for that to happen. You know, when someone would call something an imperial cider, of course, the Europeans just hate that kind of stuff because you know, Russian imperial stout, that's the only thing you could call imperial. But I think that's where the cider makers in the U.S. really kind of push the envelope, and that's the excitement of it. I totally agree with that.
No rules,
and really monopolizing on the diversity of the apple, which is just crazy making. So with that, with your work here and the trends and all that, you know, the Cider Act is coming up.
Mm-hmm. Very familiar.
Yeah. What are your thoughts on that?
I mean,
this probably might post after maybe the Cider Act gets.
Signed.
It might be the end of this year here.
I hope so, and we, you know, we're very involved in making that happen as a company. And I'm also on the United States Cider Maker Association board, so you know, I'm close to it, and you know, something we care deeply about. It's gonna open up all kinds of avenues for exploration in our category, and really get to start setting us apart from everything else. The less limits, the better. I mean, it's unfortunate right now that everyone's kind of kept to doing things certain ways, and there's all these, you know, people are being prohibited, you know, cost prohibitive to do certain things, and I think that's, I mean, we're figuring it out either way, right? People are still innovating and doing all kinds of new stuff. Once everything changes, I think, cider's going to continue to expand, and
especially around that carbonation piece. And I was just drinking one of your Cider House series last night, I believe. Your favorite one,
the Muse.
That is your favorite one, because I thought you had a different one.
And we were talking about carbonation. That's the highest carbonated one, so I figured that's what you were going to say. Straw Man.
And so, you know, I let it sit, and it was still effervescent. So is that, what's the level of carbonation there? Is that kind of going over the...
That one goes over the limit.
It does go over the limit.
Then we have to pay for that.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
I'm letting it sit, actually, to drop it down a little bit to get the flavor, because effervescence, sometimes you can lose the flavor of the cider in a way. So what are you trying to do there with that series? You know, what's your fun that you're having there? Because obviously you could tell the cider maker's having fun.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that particular cider is, you know, is a homage to, you know, the ATN DuPont ciders of the world. You know, we want to kind of mimic that, you know, funky French, high carbonated, you know, mildly sweet, bitter tannic cider. And so, yeah, it was, that's a really fun one.
Yeah.
I, you know, I,
what you talk about on carbonation, I would also drink it warmer. Like I would drink almost any cider that I drank. More of a room temperature guy on that front. You know, I think if you put it up next to some of those, you know, Brittany and Normandy ciders, they have that sort of same lasting carbonation the whole time you drink it. So it's, you know, it's $1 million bubble, champagne bubbles, you know. You pay $10 for it instead of a couple hundred.
Absolutely.
You know, and that's one of the great things about ciders. You can get some of that, those qualities that are out of reach. And sort of brings it to everybody, and I think that cider does that. It's, you know, same with the rest of them. They're just, you know, the Iceman is sort of our take on an ice cider, and the Muse sort of fits in that, you know, champagne space with even higher carbonation. And
there's a couple different ways to make ice cider. And
yep.
I was wondering, are you going off like the Canadian style or?
So that we they actually aren't cryo concentrating that cider, so it's just an interpretation. Neither the leave-on or freeze-out, although we'll be doing it here.
Oh.
Yeah.
Exciting. Okay,
so,
great.
Yeah.
Is that maybe for 2016 or?
I mean, we'll do it this winter, so right. Yeah.
2016.
Yeah. Next spring we'll have some.
So there'll be some more Cider House
stuff. Yeah, I think we're working on, like, what we're going to package here. We've got the ability to put stuff into 750s, and we can do some kegging, I mean, all on a really small scale, so... you know, by spring next year, we should have a bunch of Cider House collection that's made here at this Cider House and only available here at this Cider House. It's exciting. I can't wait to get stuff into bottles.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
And I just want to go back to that terroir. Again, you mentioned Steve at Farnham Hill and, of course, the spontaneous fermentation, because that's really like where it all starts, to get that terroir.
Yep.
And so I really feel that we are starting to get some of that out, because we
absolutely.
Have a lot of the cider makers doing that.
And brewers
doing it too, absolutely. So we're getting that regional piece there. But if you were going to, right now you're an East Coast cidery, is it also being made in Pennsylvania too? Mm-hmm. So there's the three spots,
three
locations. But really it's East Coast. Can you speak as an East Coast cider maker? What do you see as the differences between just in the U.S. on what's happening? Because a lot of stuff often comes from the West Coast.
That's what makes it confusing, right? I think, you know, from a volume standpoint, you know, a lot of cider makers are sending trucks across the country. So you might be in Michigan making cider, but... you know, more than half your fruit's coming from the West Coast. And it's hard to know that as a drinker, like, where is everything coming from? And then it makes it harder to say, well, this is a, you know, Michigan cider or a New York cider if you're getting fruit from somewhere else. So, you know, what is terroir? I mean, it's...
But your spontaneous fermentation is going to really bring that in.
So that can really bring that in, even if you bring, even in Brussels, where they make Cantillon, Cantillon is a specific terroir. Well, Brussels isn't a cherry orchard anymore. It's a big city, and none of the raw material is grown there anymore. It's grown elsewhere, and it gets sent in. So the terroir is in the wood, and it was what once was, you know, kind of captured in this building.
Yeah.
And so I think you could say that you can establish a microclimate, a terroir of your facility, even, and that obviously is coming in from outside. And, you know, if your fruit comes from elsewhere, you know, it just gives you a different. It's a different terroir, right?
Absolutely. Do you have a problem calling, like, using that term in cider terroir?
Not at all.
So that's something that. Because feel like, oh, that's a wine term, but I think it really works well for cider.
Yeah, I mean, this is
like wine.
What grows well on this property doesn't grow well on the property a couple orchards over, or definitely a couple towns over, and certainly a couple states over. You know, I mean, so there are attributes that, you know, New York State apples have that no other place has, and same with. You know,
absolutely.
You know, everywhere else. And same, you know, we go to great lengths to source great fruit from great regions, and we don't do that, you know, we do it because of that. We do it because of the specifics. We do it because we can find these qualities that we can't get anywhere else.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, that's terroir right there.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
What's the soil like here?
Everything here is pretty,
It is there's a little bit of sandy kind of down in here, but it's also it's mostly like heavy and clay. Okay. So up here, great. And then as you start to head down that way, it planes out and it's downhill. Sort of frost pocket and the yeah. You know, we get closer to the water and right. gets a little sandier down there.
Mm-hmm. Now this farm, the Chris family farm yeah. and the Angry Orchard site here, it's really well situated just north of New York City. Mm-hmm. Fishkill's like a huge like distribution center, and maybe you don't even tap into that, but there's a lot of places in New York that are growing great apples. Why here?
I mean, part of the New York City is one of the reasons we, you know, you mentioned that we want to be close to people. We want to be able to show this place off and have people come through. Yeah, I mean, there's just such a great long history of apple growing and cider making in the mm-hmm. region. You know, we looked all over the place. It took us about 2 years to get to you and I standing here and talking. And we, you know, we found this orchard, and with its own history, and of course the Chris family is, and Jeff in particular is just the resources, you know, as I mentioned, is unreal. So yeah. we've got him to you know help us continue the history of this place. And I mean, you can look around; it's just a beautiful piece of property, and he's had a ton of success. This is the third biggest crop he's ever gotten off this property since he's been farming it since 1963. So I think we've got a lot of opportunity to get some great harvest here in the future.
Mm-hmm. And they look like small trees to me if I'm looking out.
But, yep.
And these,
sevens.
These are all planted.
Most of it was planted in the late 70s, early 80s. When he took over the farm in 63, it had already been operational for 40, 50 years. And between 63 and early 80s, they turned the whole farm over. So nothing younger than like mid 80s.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And different age trees will definitely produce different kinds of
yep.
fruit for sure. So in the course of a year, you're obviously able to make cider all year round.
Mm-hmm.
And how often are you doing that?
So, we're just getting going right now.
Yeah.
So, we'll be...
Sorry, that's an unfair question then, but...
No, it's fine.
Sure.
We'll be firing up all the equipment next week, and we'll be making cider through the winter, probably up until, you know, springtime. Luckily, we've got the farm is equipped with 4 cold store rooms, so... We've been filling those up with apples the last couple weeks.
Great.
Pretty much filled to the gills right now. But
good harvest, huh?
Well, yeah. I mean, and not just from here. I mean, we're using our own fruit, but I'm bringing fruit in from all around the Northeast.
Nice.
You know, primarily from New York State, but some New Hampshire stuff, other places around New England.
Well, let's talk about New York State and
yeah.
how New York State is treating the ciders. How's that
yeah.
been going?
Positive.
Very positive.
Very positive. Yeah. It's unbelievable, and it's a product of the industry is changing. Right. 4 years ago, when I was trying to get people to put fruit in the ground, they were like, "Screw off," you know. Now I can go and talk to some people and say, "Hey, this is for real now. You see that, right?" And they're like,
mm-hmm.
"Yeah." And it's getting easier and easier. It's still not totally easy, and there's still a lot of kinks to work out on how to make things work best for both cider makers and growers. But New York wants to be the cider state, and in my opinion, should be the cider state. And luckily,
is that because you're a hometown guy, or what?
I mean, I say it honestly. I believe in it. You know,
well, really it, lost out on the apple scene, and then all went out to the West Coast.
Yeah, and I in my high school, which is I mentioned from Williamson, New York, hometown of Mott's, the biggest apple planting in the state, continuous outplanting state is my hometown, and we had Washington apples in my high school, in my middle school, and I never understood why you're eating Red Delicious from the West Coast. That is since changed. But yeah, I mean, we just, you know, you go up there and you know, people will take pride in the fruit up there. It is different. It is special. It has mm-hmm. complexities, and just on the eating apples.
Mm-hmm.
And same with the Hudson Valley, that are just different than everywhere else. In my opinion, you taste a Macintosh out of New York, you taste from anywhere else,
doesn't hold a candle, and it's a totally different apple. And I think people really take pride in that, and it maybe has been lost for a while. I think you're right; it went out to the West Coast, and we sort of lost that. But I think that's changing right now.
Yeah, definitely. Well, we're coming together in a way because it's all one country. We want a good economy across the country.
In a moment, Ryan and I will be speaking about what he believes are some of the misconceptions that the public has about Angry Orchard and their ciders. But I want to just take this moment to really thank you for listening to this podcast. Your subscriptions via iTunes mean a lot, and it's keeping us up in the news and noteworthy section of iTunes, and that means a lot to me. So thanks, Ciderville. Thanks for listening to Cider Chat. Now let's get back to this chat.
You know, when I say I'm coming to Angry Orchard, it's like, wow, that's like going to, you know, this big, big place.
Sure.
And I remember, geez, I don't know if it was 2012 or something, when I was watching the Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. And I go, I was just waiting for this moment to come. I'm like, holy smokes, there is a cider commercial during the Super Bowl.
Yep.
And of course, I've been, you know, writing about cider when nobody, like yourself, nobody wanted to talk to you about apples. And I was just like, pulled over.
Yeah.
And so Angry Orchard's really been a front in that way, you know, really holding that torch. So what would you say to the smaller cideries in the U.S. who are kind of saying, they're doing high production, and what do you say to the small cideries who are just starting out, or that listener who's like thinking, I want to get into cider, geez, it's like so happening.
Yeah.
Where do you start doing that?
I mean, it all starts with apples, right? So find them.
You didn't go to school for cider making, did you?
Is there a school for cider making yet?
Well, they're not a school. But there's some courses. I guess Peter Mitchell, you know.
I'm taking the Peter Mitchell course this December.
You didn't never came to my cider making course. See, that was, you know, that was like over 20 years ago.
Yeah,
so.
I did. I went to Siebel in Chicago, more brewing focused. Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say that's necessarily the right path. Certainly, some of the classes that are available, like the Peter Mitchell class, and we're going to be offering one. The United States Cider Maker Association will be offering one, which is in
cider making or cider judging.
No, cider making.
Cider making.
Yeah, it'll be the cider certification program, which will be in the first one will be in Portland.
Starting in February.
Yeah. That's probably a good place to start. Peter Mitchell, if you can get into one of his classes, is a good place to start. But I mean, there's a lot of books out there. And so if you can't take the class, if you can't get into a class, if you can't afford the class, Amazon is a great place to start. Read a book.
Tip of the hat to them, no doubt.
Yeah, I mean, or, you know, buy wherever you buy your book the Claude Joclair book. I mean, that's the best resource for cider making I've ever read. And I've read all of them. And so there's lots of good information out there. But, man, that book really narrows it down and gives you – I mean, he tells you how to build a press, sort of like an Andrew Lee book. You know, it really shows you how to do it from front to back. And I, as a professional cider maker, use it as a resource. I've got a copy in my house. I've got a copy in my office. I've got a copy in my desk, in the lab. I mean, just a – awesome book.
Why don't you say the title of that book?
It is the I said all that and then I'm not something. The New Cider Maker's Guide. It is.
He was just speaking at Cider Days.
Yeah, he's great, and I butchered his last name. I know that's not how you actually say it.
It's okay. We'll have a link to.
How do you actually say it?
Show notes, but I think you did a great job.
Wait, how do you say it?
Chloe. My French,
sorry, Chloe.
Je ne sais pas le français. But
the New Cider Maker's Handbook.
I would say Claude.
Yeah.
I don't know if you have to do an accent on it.
Yeah,
but.
I don't know. I'm not French from New York.
right.
But yeah, I mean, I would start with getting all the information. Get all the information you can get, and then start looking at apples and production and all that stuff. And you know what?
try to find a place to work. If you really want to do it, go work for somebody. You know, that's what I did, and I, you know, it worked out for me. You know,
did that begin at Virtue or was it somewhere
professionally?
Else? Professionally,
no. Yeah.
So right there, that was the beginnings, and you were came in as like an assistant cider maker.
Yeah, I mean, we were just making cider in a basement on a hand crank press into carboys, and
a lot of people.
I knew about it, and I went after it, and.
Mm-hmm. So, becoming cider maker at Angry Orchard, just out of curiosity, so was this like a job posting, or was this word of mouth, or?
The job was posted, but I was just happened to meet some Angry Orchard people, and it just kind of went from there.
Good for you.
Yeah.
Great.
Once I heard about this project, and then once I got to know the company and the you know effort into quality, mm-hmm. it was a no-brainer for me. I've had the opportunity to travel all over the world now, to you know see cider making from a totally new perspective, and from a you know the what's most exciting and challenging is to develop cider that it isn't just for the nerdiest palate, but something that everybody enjoys, and I have really liked that, and it's changed the way that I make cider, and I couldn't be happier. So I can still, you know, make a full Brett fermentation, you know, weird strange thing, and then I get to make, you know, crisp, and to me, that's great. I get to appeal to everybody and show people what cider can be on so many different levels. So
I think it definitely opens up the door for a lot of people.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you wouldn't know that. And I think, you know, in many ways, cider makers can kind of tip their hat to Angry Orchard for really putting it out there.
Yeah.
On the Super
and I hope so. Well. You know, some people, you know, I see a ton of misconception about us. I read.
What would be some of the
whatever gets put out there
that you would see?
Well, I think most people don't know that we don't use that we use bittersweet fruit. I mean, we use so much bittersweet fruit. It is the crux of this company. It is what we spend our time on, and it's the basis of Crisp, which is you know the biggest selling cider in the country right now, and it has this huge bittersweet content. I think people don't. Pay attention to us on that because we're Angry Orchard, we're the big guy, and I'm guilty of it too. Before I was here, I might have said the same thing. I definitely said the same thing, you know, but I just didn't know because it's easy to kind of knock the guy out front I mean our focus on sourcing this fruit. I mean, where do you think this fruit comes from? It comes from farmers, and we're about supporting agriculture. We buy a lot of fruit, and all that fruit comes from individual small family growers, and you know, in France, in Italy, and in America, and we're proud to be able to do that. It is what matters to us. We go after this high quality raw material.
Mm-hmm.
So our focus on that, and then our focus on quality and consistency, I think sets a standard in the industry. You know, you may not like Angry Orchard because you think it's, you know, Angry Orchard Crisp because it's too sweet, or you might not like Angry Orchard because we're, you know, the biggest guy in the playing field, but our attention to high quality and consistency and repeatability and just a high quality product is what we're all about.
Right.
So I think that, well, I know that we're proud of that, and I'd like to think that the industry is proud of us for doing that.
Mm-hmm. Well said.
I really want to thank Ryan Burke of Angry Orchard for spending time with me and having a chat about what he's doing there and what we could expect from Angry Orchard. You know, I had some of their ciders down in the tasting room, some of the ones that are not served normally. They're not going to go out into the public, and he's kind of really going to be pushing the envelope. So expect greatness. I expect nothing less, not only from Ryan, but, you know, when you have somebody like Jim Koch of the Boston Beer Company really at the main helm of the larger organization, I can't think of anything better or more exciting of what we could expect from cider from Angry Orchard in the future. And to really hit such a diverse market is not easy. And I think he spoke very well of that. And I also wanted to say one more thing is that I feel that it would be a great injustice to not do anything but thank Angry Orchard for propelling cider forward in the minds of many people. You know, if we didn't see those commercials on TV, a lot of people wouldn't even know what cider is. And the fact that they were on the Super Bowl, and almost every night, if I'm watching the tube, I see them up there promoting cider. And that's education that is just priceless. So tip of the hat to them all. And I have a special thank you to Angry Orchard for making it possible for me to have a cider swag contest. That's awesome in my mind. And this is going to be running beginning today, December 16th through January 16th. So you have 1 month to get it done and enter to win some cider swag from Angry Orchard. And this is all you have to do to enter. Just post a 5-star review on iTunes or Stitcher. That's where we are shooting off the podcast. It goes to other places, but that's where we're really looking for the 5-star review on those two sites, iTunes or Stitchers. And the links will be on the show notes. You then will take a screenshot of the review and either, one, tweet the screenshot to me at Cider Chat, post it on the Cider Chat Facebook wall, or email me if you are not on social media to Rhea@ciderchat.com with the screenshot. And that's it. Really easy. Just take the time to post the 5-star review at iTunes or Stitcher. Take a screenshot, put it on a social media. And if you're not on social media, just send it to me. I will be selecting the 5 top reviews. The best of the best reviews will receive 2 Angry Orchard glasses. Now, I haven't really spoke about this. They made their own glassware for drinking cider in. And it's this, you know, it has this beautiful etching on it of an apple. You'll see some photos of it on the show notes to this page. And at the bottom of the glass, on the very bottom, there's actually a little etching in the glass, which is like a seed to an apple. And what that does is as you pour the cider in and the effervescence hits that, it kind of bubbles it up and it just gives this nice streaming. It's a fun glass to look at. And if you are into swag, kind of like I'm into swag, and it's fun to have a particular glass, it certainly will create some excellent chatting at your table. And that's what it's all about, is having a good chat. So the best of the best reviews will receive 2 Angry Orchard glasses. The 2 second best reviews will each receive an Angry Orchard paddle opener, because everybody deserves a good paddle now and then. And the 3rd best reviews will receive an Angry Orchard keychain opener. And you know, when I travel, one thing I always carry in my briefcase is an opener wherever I am, because a lot of hotels nowadays, they don't have that anymore in the hotel room, an opener. So I like having a keychain opener. And often if I'm doing like an Airbnb or I'm renting a house somewhere, I'll take off their giant keychain holder and I'll put that little key that they give me for my rental on my Angry Orchard keychain opener and go and keep that in my pocket or my briefcase or something like that. So great, 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 great swag here. And again, just go to the show notes for episode 9 or go to the Cider Chat website and go to the page, which is titled Cider Swag Contest. And you'll see the official rules and what you have to do. It's pretty easy peasy. Just post a 5-star review for this podcast, iTunes or Stitcher, take a screenshot, put it on social media, or email it to me. No purchase required. And one last thing I must say is that this contest is available only to folks who are in the US of A at this point. Maybe the next Cider Chat contest, as we kind of grow and start getting sponsors and donations for the show, I could send it out. But right now, it's on my coin, and I'm doing the best I can. All right. But I hope that doesn't deter you. Even if you're not getting the swag, please think about leaving a review and rating today. It will mean a lot for cider. And if you love cider like I do, it should be no problem going in there and leaving a review and rating. All righty. Wow. So that was a big show. A lot of information there. And I'm feeling thirsty. So I'm going to go pop a little cider and give a toast to each and every one of you in Ciderville. This is Rhea Wincoller, signing off for now. I look forward to seeing you soon in Ciderville.